outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, Kai was off playing hooky this past weekend. He was out to Ohio to do some training with a group of folks out there, and he's decided, man, I'm a little bit worn out from all that, to come home to family and job and work and still pull a podcast off. So we had someone pinch hit for us this week. And if you've looked at the God Journey website and seen the picture, you already know who it is. It's my favorite person in the whole world.
Aww.
True, my wife, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome back to a podcast.
Thank you.
Something you'd said you'd never do again, you've done about 8 or 9 of them since.
Quite a bit.
And you're getting more relaxed about it.
Sure.
Yeah, if you followed our story last year, you'll know that Sarah had some before undetected childhood trauma emerge from her life, and that meant she left me. She had to leave me to kind of preserve her life, or so a therapist had told her, and I was away on a trip, came back. We got reconnected after a time, a very painful time for me, and
yes.
I think painful time for you as well.
Yes.
We're coming up on the year anniversary of that, and we're still processing that story, and then...
Kind of hard to believe it's been almost a year.
It's hard to believe the whole thing happened, right?
Yeah, that's what I was saying this morning.
Yeah.
Seems kind of impossible, but yeah.
And if you haven't heard that story, going back almost June sometime, there's a podcast called The Unforeseen Circumstances. You jump on that, and then the next 7 will kind of unfold the story. And then there's a few more from the road. We talked about additional memories, additional processing, and how that was going for us, and Wayne's happiest day ever, which is still my favorite day. It was just so magical, so unreal, but there's been many good days since. But you haven't talked to anybody since we got back from RVing around, so.
We've done a couple of Zooms with trauma people.
Yeah, but we haven't done a podcast.
No.
These people haven't heard from you. Unless they volunteered to do a walking through trauma with us, they haven't been there.
That's true.
So they haven't seen you.
Nope.
So we got home, moved into your escape apartment.
Yes. And it was a mess, a huge mess. We kind of just dumped stuff in here and it.
You have no idea how unorganized our life was when we returned. I've been married to this woman over 47 years, coming up on 48.
Wow.
And we've never had that big of a mess in our lives in any place we've ever lived. But
no.
We sold our home in Newbury Park and loaded up an RV and threw everything we had to in some storage units and this apartment.
Yep.
And then we left town. I mean, we closed escrow the day after we left. And no, it was a week after we left, but... We left out of the old house, and there was not much left there when we camped out there. And then
last night we slept on the floor, I guess. Yeah, it was on the floor, and then we left early in the next day, and we just dumped things in the apartment and said we would deal with it when we got back. And, well, that's what we had to do.
Yeah, we had to deal with it for sure, and we still can't find everything we need.
No.
It's either here somewhere hidden or in a storage locker somewhere, but...
But you realize after being on the road 3 months and a day in an RV, you realize how much you don't need in order to survive.
Oh, gosh, so much less. We could just give all 4 of those storage units away. And
no. No, no.
Nice try.
No, there's Christmas decorations. There's bird feeders in there. There's some stuff, valuable stuff in there.
You're not convincing me, though, on those Christmas decorations. Although I've agreed to be better about Christmas because that's one of Sarah's favorite things.
And you did get us a tree.
I did. And I didn't bah humbug you once this Christmas time.
And you hung lights and we put a wreath on.
So we got through the holidays together, which was awesome. And then...
I had to get ready for all the tax stuff to be done for live stream.
And then we...
Had to get ready for surgery.
Yeah, Sarah had her shoulder repaired, so a little rotator cuff tear and some other stuff.
That was a big ouch.
That was 4 weeks ago?
4 weeks ago today. Yeah. So I have 2 more weeks on the sling, and then I start physical therapy. So I'm one-handed.
Yeah, she's still learning to live as a one-armed woman, but she's not near as much pain as she was in the first week or two after all that happened. And then yesterday, we bought a home.
Yes, we did.
Big drama and all this trip has been. Where will Wayne and Sarah settle after all of this? And I was keeping my eye open for places to live while we were driving around the U.S. But
every state, every single state.
Yeah, it'd be nice here. Look how much we could buy here with our California money from our house and
everywhere.
But the draw of those pesky grandkids.
Yeah, but I like California. I like here.
Why?
Sun and the temperature and the ability to garden and I don't know, like by the ocean.
So we looked at quite a few things around here. We found a home last week that interested us and we put an offer in and kind of negotiated some things around. And a lot of people are wanting this house. It's kind of a nice little house. It's not more than a mile and a half probably from where we were living before. So we'll stay in Newbury Park for the foreseeable future and have a new home to settle in. The people selling it need money quick to buy their property or buy their house or whatever in Montana. So they're going to Montana, which I wouldn't mind going to Montana.
I know.
That was one of the states, which there's like 49 other states I would have loved to go to besides.
I know.
I tried to get her to Hawaii. Someone offered us some acreage in Georgia that we could buy in the mountains of Georgia, which I would be a godsend. But yes, the kids, grandkids are nearby here. So at least one of the kids. The other one's still in Denver. But so we'll see. We're going to base out of here. We're going to keep the RV. We're going to make some other trips probably coming up and go hang out with some folks that want to hang out. Have we retired? That was the big question when we left. Have you retired?
I would say if you count just being involved in people's lives and wanting to help people, no.
Yeah, I would say people. I retired 25 years ago, and we also retired 2 years ago in the sense that nobody pays us for what we do.
True. Yes, right. We aren't getting paid for anything that we do.
We haven't gotten paid for live stream for some time, a couple of years, and we enjoy it. We enjoy the freedom to give our lives away. However, and God's provided enough for us to do that, so we're grateful to be able to do that. But no, we haven't retired. I still plan on doing some writing. We're still podcasting. This whole experience has changed kind of the nature of what we do in the world.
Yeah. I would like to go, we're talking about maybe next fall, want to go to some kind of do not the same type of trip, but, you know, similar things going around. And
maybe not as far. We have talked about, I know we get lots of people, come here, but we did get a lot of invitations to Canada last time. One of these days, we'd like to maybe go up to Vancouver and just do the whole Canadian experience. We got friends all across Canada, clear out to New Brunswick or something. I mean, we could go clear out the Maritimes. So we'll see if that's not probably going to happen this year since we've got lots of other things to do. We'd also love to get to New England in the fall again. We'd love to do that.
We'd like to do that.
It's been a while since we've been there. I'm hoping we'll fly that trip. But
and I also said that I guess I put it this way. I wonder if Israel would be the same if I saw it now.
Why would it be different? Israel has not changed.
I know.
Except Israel it's gotten more commercial. You can promise that. It's gotten more commercial.
I know it's not changed.
What would have changed?
Me. It's like because of the whole view of God's love, and I know that I'm loved now versus before that I struggled to be loved. And I think there's a difference of looking on his life and what he said.
Well, I think you knew intellectually.
Yeah,
you were
but
loved.
It's not in the. But
this moving the trauma has opened up a greater space for you. Wouldn't you say it that way? That now you experience the love of God in a different way.
Where I was blind and now I see. And so it's different. And the whole sense of him going to the cross and what he gave up and did that for me and seeing all those places, I think that. I anticipate that that would be a different experience for me.
Okay. And you want to find out?
Yes.
So
you are doing a trip.
This was funny. For Sarah me. Says, I wonder if I'd like to go to Israel again. I said, do you want to go? And she said, I would. And it was very definitive, which you're not very definitive when you asked about things you want to do.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I don't know, maybe. But and the same week, some other person contacted me and said, hey, if you guys ever do another Israel trip, I'd like to go with you. So we're planning one. We had one planned before COVID hit for the following February, a year out from when COVID actually hit, and that didn't happen. So we're probably going to go this late January, early February. We haven't got dates nailed down yet. When we do, we'll make it available. If you want to go, you can email me and say, put me on the list. List is getting full.
And I asked you to take me to Petra too.
Yeah, so we're going to Petra as well, which was great. I'd love to take Sarah to Petra. I really would. And you also get in Jordan a little bit, and you get to Mount Horeb where Moses said goodbye to the people of Israel and got to see the promised land and say hello to God face to face. So
I think
special.
I see his pain in a different light.
His pain.
His pain for my pain.
Yeah.
is in a different light. And I think that will hold true in my heart differently.
This whole experience has changed my view of the agony of God in the path of redemption. And we haven't talked about it a lot. We kind of hinted around on the podcast. Kyle and I are going to dig into it coming up. But I have really experienced a different way of holding space, not just the agony of Jesus on the cross, but the agony God holds in his heart for the state of the world. And that's earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. That's war in Ukraine. That's starvation in Kenya. The places of the world that we touch fairly closely. There's enough pain in it, the pain of trauma, the thing we've been, Sarah and I have been meeting with people who are dealing with trauma in small kind of walking through trauma kinds of groups where we kind of listen to each other's stories and just encourage each other.
And it's not just sexual abuse. I mean, it's just
all kinds of trauma.
Yeah.
To children being murdered, to children dying, to it just all kinds of stuff that we're getting to hold with people. So it's really changed the nature of how we live in the world. Mm-hmm. Have you regretted at all ever sharing your story?
Absolutely not.
Really? That's kind of definitive again. This is a new Sarah for me, people. Why have you not regretted it? It's not been without cost.
No. I know the pain and the loneliness and despair and sorrow and doubts that go with people who are feeling that. And I know when starting out, I was doing some looking and reading on sexual abuse, trying to figure out when I first found out what my grandpa had done, and the YouTubes and just, you know, phrases and a sentence or a word would just give hope to me, knowing that, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. I'm not losing my mind. And I just like, if I can do that to just one person, I don't regret it.
Wow. And we now have in Sarah's story from the age of 4 to perhaps 9 or 10.
Yeah, 9 or 10 now.
Of the kind of sexual abuse that she underwent, first from a grandpa, then from a cousin. And it was a bit enabled by an aunt.
And a farm worker.
And a farm. So it's a pretty real story. It's hard to believe it happened to you and it got to hide for 64 years. That's kind of amazing.
That's still hard to, I know it's true, but it's still hard to comprehend. And it's probably hard for some people to imagine. I don't, you know, a year ago, I don't know if I would have believed that's possible, but The Body Keeps a Score was a book that really helped me to believe and understand how that can happen.
How the amnesia can happen.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't repressed memories for Sarah. Yeah. Sarah like didn't like knew it her whole life, but just kept ignoring it. It wasn't repressed.
I didn't know.
It was gone. But I think where the book helped is you had symptoms, PTSD symptoms in your life and things that are normal trauma responses that you just didn't have a reason for. They were in your life. They were there. It made you feel horrible.
Yep.
Because you didn't know any reason why you should feel bad about these things. But this has really unplugged you to be Sarah and to see what's really gone on for you.
But it still is unraveling. It doesn't.
Or entangling.
Everything is so tangled up together. It's like if you had a few ball of yarn and then a dog got into them, which I had that happen once, and they are a mess. And instead of cutting them, you can't cut them. You have to unravel them and create new pathways. And
We talk about like the Christmas tree lights that get all tangled up. And you can cut it all up if you want to, but then it's no good in the end. And so you got to entangle them, but we're not good enough. You're not, I'm not, even whether it's entangling Christmas lights, which I guess you can do if you spend a lot of time. But it really is for God, Jesus, to renew our minds, to take us to places in his time, in his way, that cause different things to unravel. So this becomes a little freer, and then there's some other knot over here, and then that gets to free up. And we're still in that process. We're not done. We're not pronouncing mission accomplished. Sarah's all good and better again.
No, I thought I was better. And then when surgery came and all that, that just brought about another one that was very violent, but yet put more puzzle pieces together. and help me understand.
At the same time, we've never had more fun as a married couple.
Yep.
And looking at the adventure of life, of where we would live, where we would go, what we would, still.
It's not rosy every day, though.
Not rosy.
Nope.
Between us, it is, though, I think.
Yes. But for me, there's a not a constant. There is a ongoing talking through and processing patterns of thought that still come up. And I might be like that maybe the rest of my life. I don't know.
The automatic ways you think when certain situations present themselves.
Yes, go to by default.
What you call, the default system. They're still there, but you're much more aware of them.
Yeah.
I mean, a few years ago, all those defaults were just the ocean you swam in, and you didn't see them as defaults. You didn't see them as problematic. It just, that's how Sarah copes with life.
Well, should I say, we had this TV series we were going to watch, and we've watched it before, and we...
It was a new season.
New season, and we bought it.
Rented it.
Okay,
I don't buy TV series.
We rented it.
We rented it.
We paid $10 for it, not the end of the world, but anyhow... And we got all the way through it, I think.
But the first episode.
The first episode. And my whole brain issue and things that was happening and all that, it was getting worse and worse. And I'm just like, And so I'm recognizing them. And I think it was my chest was getting tight and having a hard time breathing. And then afterwards, I told you, I said, I can't watch that.
Well, your whole forehead where you experienced pressure. I mean, all of these, the things that triggered for you or activated for you, as Joni likes to say, were mostly physical.
Yeah.
It wasn't like memories and things like that got stirred. There was a physical reaction to trauma in your body.
And I was starting to get even lightheaded and I'm just like, what is going on? So I'm recognizing it, which is
beautiful.
Good.
Beautiful.
But then afterwards I said, I can't watch it anymore.
Yeah. So. I'm going to have to watch it by myself now if I'm going to go on without Sarah. But.
And it took about 3 or 4 hours. It slowly, all that went away.
Yeah, but it's great. Kyle talks about it as honoring your trauma, honoring it. Now, why that activated the physical responses for you? It didn't activate memories. It activated a very physical, which is part of your PTSD symptomatic. It didn't go to that real PTSD place, but it's the beginning stages of that.
But I think that was before like the surgery and stuff. And I think that was also some of the scenes that were in previous episodes that were lingering in that one was very close to the memory.
Yeah. But I loved how you just said, I don't think I can watch this anymore. And I went, really? And we talked about it a little bit. And then 2 days later, saying, is that still what we're thinking? And yep, still what we're thinking.
Yep.
So now we're a month away from that. And I still haven't seen episode 2. So because we're together all the time. I don't know when I'm going to watch episode 2. I have to do it when I'm working out some morning. But this has obviously put us, where it has changed what we do in the world, it has put us with a very different group of people in very different conversations from what I would have been having a year ago.
Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful. I don't have any regrets about this journey. I don't have any regrets about the pain I went through, how I had to discover what was going on for you and being able to stand in that place for you until God brought you back. We saw something today where somebody's talking about waiting for somebody, and my favorite question was when Sarah, we were still apart at the time, but she'd come over and we were sitting on the couch together and talking outside on the patio, watching the birds. Sarah just in tears just said, will you wait for me? And she more mouthed the words and said them because you weren't talking. Will you wait for me?
Yeah, I was very soft-spoken at that point in time back then.
And that's my favorite phrase right now. Will you wait for me?
And I didn't even know what I was even thinking of.
Waiting for.
Because I don't even know.
No, memories, trauma had not emerged yet.
Yeah, and I had no clue what I was really kind of saying.
I mean, the traumatic responses were all there, but we didn't know what had happened to you in your childhood that activated all that. And it was just, that was the first moment I knew that she wanted me to wait, that there was hope. There was something on the other side of this where we would maybe find a way to get in. And that's talked about on the walk this morning. I am grateful every moment I breathe that Sarah and I found a way back to each other, that we found a way past this trauma. Because if we hadn't have, life would be so empty.
Yeah, I go, but I'm hoping someday I know these don't help. I have so many what ifs, but that doesn't do any good. And it's just where I am and go on, because to live in the past doesn't help now.
Yeah. And I think what ifs are for almost all of us. The way sin seems to activate in our lives is we're always imagining the ideal. And then when God grows us up in something, we look back and go, well, what if I hadn't? What if I'd known 40 years ago what you were dealing with internally? I would have been very different. I would have responded to you very differently if I'd have known. But what ifs and regrets and that whole thing for imperfection, someone was sharing with me the other day, that if they get to the end of the day and made mistakes, they've got to deal with those mistakes. That's the last thing they think about before they go to bed is what I did wrong today.
But the what ifs is for some, I think, I don't know if others are feeling that, but I think somebody who's going with trauma, it helps you focus on your failures. And then, which for me just gets me back, oh, well, you were that bad person, which I don't feel that anymore. I don't feel the horribleness, but I still.
It's like the enemy dangles it out there. You could go down that road.
Yeah.
You just used to not to now because you know better. But I do think people who struggle with progress, like, I hope every few months of my life, I'm learning new things about God that I go, ooh, I wish I'd known this 20 years ago. If you stop wishing you knew something 20 years ago, you stop growing.
Yeah.
And growth is a great thing. God's in a growth industry, growing our hearts. So I love when something unpacks. And yes, if we'd known, we'd have done things differently, but we didn't know. This is how it unfolded. And that's one of the things in the Chronicles of Narnia that Lewis keeps coming back to is what could have been, what should have been. We don't get to know that stuff. It's what is and living in what is.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful right now. I mean, we're still in it. We're still in some of the stuff unfolding for you. And
yeah.
But we're in it together. And I love that. And now we've got a little sign about, and then they built together a life they love. And a new house, a new place to live is kind of the first piece of that.
Yeah.
And it's not that we haven't appreciated the apartment, but it is kind of tiny in here. And there's a lot of hassles of apartment living, including some noise from upstairs.
Yeah, that's not too bad. It's the poor dogs and Abby. She doesn't have a yard. And
yeah, well, there's somebody upstairs with a drum. So at times it does get bad.
Yeah.
It's a bass drum thumping up there. Yeah, we can get by it. We only got another month now. I love that thing about, you know what? You can do anything to me now because we're out of here in about a month's time unless our escrow blows up somehow.
Yeah, and that brings the whole thing. I'm not going to be able to do too much.
So I thought it might be helpful. You've already kind of gotten into some of it, but I thought it'd be really helpful to have Sarah here talking about, because in our conversations with people who have trauma, who are dealing with traumatic circumstances, and some are, it's not all childhood trauma. It's happened in the last year of their lives. Pain with adult children and things like that. So we thought, you know, we've had a pretty good survey now for a year, 9 months, of what's been helpful and what hasn't been helpful. And so what are the things, Sarah, that have been most helpful to you? And the reason we're talking about this is not, oh, for Sarah's story. I want us to take those of us who know people who've been traumatized, and you do know them, whether you know they've been traumatized or not, in the situation, you do know them, and how we treat them either opens doors to healing or it pushes them back in that closet of pain that they've been negotiating by themselves. And we've heard this from a lot of people, as well as your own story. So what has most helped you in this journey?
Well, the first thing was how you responded. You didn't respond anywhere like I thought, and you were gentle and kind and very low-key. I don't know if that's a good word. Soft-spoken.
Soft-spoken is probably a good word. Gentle.
Gentle.
Tender.
Which created for me, and I think for most people, an environment of safetiness. And there were a couple times where your voice was just increasing a little bit, not getting upset or frustrated, but whenever that, if it would get increased.
If it moves above 8 decibels. I could see it in her face. It's like.
I just shrink back in. There wasn't, how you responded was huge.
Well, back if some of you listened to that early part of this thing. When Sarah was gone, God put me through a crash course on tenderness and gentleness, used a lot of people in my life to kind of aim me in a direction that I think God was already developing in me, but like moved it way down the road, slowing to Sarah's pace, letting her be in control of what would happen with us, whether we'd get back together or not. All those things, creating a safe, soothing environment. In all the literature we read about trauma, that's the number one thing you can provide for someone who's dealing with. And I don't think we want to limit it to just trauma. Any kind of pain or brokenness or even sin in their life, the safe, soothing place for people to deal with it, being a gentle person. I grew up in a version of Christianity that always had all the answers, and you were telling people what to do to be better. And you weren't a safe place for people to hurt and to be inside someone's pain and walk them out, which was, to me, is always the treasured thing of the shack, was that God showed up in the midst of Mac's sadness and helped walk him out of it. And I think that's what we need to be with other people. How do we incarnate Jesus into the pain and lostness that other people feel instead of just throwing answers at them and telling them to act better?
And that just might be a shoulder that you just cry on, and that's all you do. Yeah. And
or talk to for hours.
Yes, and over hours. And over and over again. For me, it was such a shock. It took a long time to believe what I was thinking and hearing and reading, to try and understand and put all of it together, because it was such a shock, because it was so unknown to me. And that takes a lot of patience and understanding, and for somebody just to listen to it over and over again. Because someday it will end. Someday you would be done processing, and everybody's different.
Yeah. And I think that's helped in terms of the speed of your healing, which it's not even been a year yet. Still not done with it. But even your therapist tells you
things are
moving awful fast. And
it's been very new.
I think that's been partly because you've had a lot of, what you can't hire a therapist to do is to be there 24/7 and process your stuff at 11 at night or 2 in the morning or whenever you're stirring with something. Being inside someone's pain and watching God move without trying to fix them is the most incredible space I've ever occupied on this planet. And I would say to husbands or wives of traumatized spouses, if they'll let you in and you can hang in there with that gentleness and just let them control the process, and if they need to share with you the same story 27 times, listen like it's the first time. If you can do that for somebody you love, you will never do something better, ever. And some of that, we read, like, The Body Keeps the Score, Try Softer. We read those, I read those to you. So it wasn't just we read them and maybe talked about it. We were talking about it in real time. We would read a page and then we'd talk or a paragraph or a sentence. And you would say, whoa, what does that mean? And we'd go back and unpack it together.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big piece. And I tell that to couples who, you know, it's easy to kind of live our own stories alongside our partner, and we just do meals and TV and activities and survival needs and laundry, and we just do tasks alongside each other and really not be inside each other's story. And it's really hard to just say, okay, well, we haven't been doing that as a couple, so we're going to sit down now on Tuesday nights and we're going to get inside each other's story, and it's not going to work. But if you can find a book to read that gets both of you thinking and talking and opening doors to each other. We're reading through He Loves Me right now, which is just hilarious. We're reading through He Loves Me and finding some wonderful things in there to stop and talk about together.
Yeah.
And that puts us inside each other's story. You're in my story as much as I'm in yours. And some of the things God's been teaching me about agony, and I don't know if you fully get those yet, because you were on a different side of this. You experienced the agony, and I experienced it for you, I think, in a, like Jesus did on the cross, and I think like God holds it for the universe. He doesn't have the sorrow of grief, of everything's horrible in the world and I can't do anything about it. God holds the agony of the world and the agony of all these people in an earthquake or starving to death in Kenya or whatever. He holds that in his heart as a way that promotes redemption in the midst of it, and not just ongoing hopelessness. But then why doesn't God fix the whole world? And he could stop all this stuff. And you might think, 50,000 people died in an earthquake. Mm. 50,000 lives snuffed out on the planet. And only God can hold that.
Yeah.
But we can also, we can experience agony on behalf of others And everything that I've experienced going through this with you has put me inside God in a different way. That I'm treasure. I treasure that sense. And like I said, we'll talk about it more up the road. I hate to keep doing that to you. I keep wanting to get off on that, but let's not. What else has been helpful to you, babe?
Early on, when the knowledge of sexual abuse was, childhood sexual abuse was coming up in my mind, and knowing that I had been subjected to that, I did some reading online and YouTube videos and
of survivors
in TED Talks of survivors, and boy, just a word or a phrase or a sentence just stuck out and just grabbed a hold of my heart. And it's like you're almost talking to me and saying, you're not alone. You're not crazy. You're not losing your mind that this did happen to you. And that was so, I mean, it made a huge difference. It made it possible for me to believe that this was happening and that I have grace to be able to handle that and accept that, even though I was still learning about that. And that's the driving force between why I, to this day, do not regret telling my story, because I know the value that gave me of knowing that I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that had this happen to me.
Sharing your story, people call it brave, and it is, but it really was to your benefit. It helped you to share your story. And it helped you process your story. I mean, as we were doing it in real time. We weren't kind of looking back on a perspective of here's how we got through that. We were going through it at the time.
No, when Kyle was interviewing us and he was, you know, asked the questions, they were very thought-provoking questions. And it did. It helped me write my story. And I'm still doing it, but write my story to include the new memories that I had been experiencing and write that and put those in my story. And then that has given me to be able to take ownership of my story.
And there's been people, as we've talked about our story.
Yes.
Who really understand pain, who want to give you the space to talk about your story and hold your story. And I think that's one of the really, really helpful things. We talked about with Joni at the podcast. If you missed the podcast about a listening ear, a caring heart and a listening ear, go back to November. It's really the things that most help Sarah. People that could listen, hold her story, cared. There's some people that just can't hold pain. They don't understand pain, so they just want to fix it. They just want to say something so you'll stop hurting in their presence. And Christianity's got a lot of that in it. It's just, we have an aversion to pain. We do well rejoicing with those who rejoice. We want to hear testimonies about how God did this, how God did that. We really don't know how to weep with those who weep. We're like Job's advisors. Although they did 7 days of weeping before they started offering counsel to Job. But still, their counsel was trying to fix stuff. And it's all the wrong things to say to people in pain. I have loved the people that have stood with us, have held your pain.
Yes.
Haven't questioned things that would be easy to question. I think if you told me a year ago someone could suffer 64 years of amnesia from childhood sexual trauma and not know a thing about it their entire lives, and I would go, I don't think that's possible. I probably would have said that. Now I've lived inside of it. I've had that thing of where you were doing some suicide ideation a year ago or more. If you would have committed suicide, I don't know what it would have done to me, but the thing I'd be aware of, you hear now it, some kid becomes an active shooter at his school or some kid commits suicide and the parents said, man, we had no idea. And my thought was always, how could you have no idea?
I get it.
I had no idea. I would have been as shocked could be.
I get it.
Yeah, me too. And so being able to hold pain, I think some of the things we heard, just because we're running out of time, that were helpful to you. We heard this recently, read in a book. The traumatic brain is a normal brain response to abnormal conditions. And I've always, because you have two people in the same accident or two people in some traumatic event or in war. One soldier comes home traumatized and the other one processed it out in a way. And it wasn't It wasn't that the one soldier's brain is better than the other. Mm-hmm. It's not that this is flawed. Trauma is a normal way for a brain to handle an abnormal circumstance. And celebrate that. I mean, I celebrate what your brain has done and got in it to negotiate this trauma, to deal with it, to find your way back, to now look deeply at very hurtful things in your past and to welcome the rebuilding of your story so that it's real.
Yep.
That explains the pain you've been through and lets you be free. The other thing, that thing we shared on the podcast a while back, you were only trying to survive.
Yes.
We think about that and we go back a year ago, our trip to Colorado, where you were fully planning on leaving me. I don't have a clue. We have this great, romantic, wonderful week together because you have an amazing gift to compartmentalize or whatever you did.
I don't know, whatever.
I do. And now it's like this horrible thing I did to Wayne, which you say sometimes, I did this horrible thing.
Yeah,
and I don't look at it that way because I look at it as you were only trying to survive and your trauma, the traumatic reactions you had inside you saw only two options and you did choose the better one. Mm-hmm. The better one is to leave me because I'll still be here. I'm going to welcome you back. Let's go to some of the things that have been most unhelpful to you or to other people that we've talked about with trauma because it's as important if we look at what helps people as what doesn't help them. So
not necessarily that I've had these said to me, but over the, you know, hearing the course and some of the things of on our trip, you know, just like, oh, you just need to forgive and forget and not forget. Sorry. You just need to forgive, and then just move on or knuckle it down, you know, just grin and bear it. Well, that happened so long ago. Are you dealing with that still? You know?
Oh, my gosh. And people mean well when they say stupid things like that, but there's still stupid things to say.
But when you're talking about trauma and it becomes obvious that the person that you're talking to does not want to hear about your trauma, that hurts. But it's not that you really don't want to make them hear about your trauma because they aren't going to care. But that's...
Yeah, you don't want to share with someone who doesn't want to hear.
Yeah, that, and you can't make them want to know if they don't really want to know.
Yeah, but and people who don't want to hold your story or they want to kind of... I think the forgiveness thing I've talked about is corporate denial. Now, I believe in the power of forgiveness. I think forgiveness is the way we let go of other people controlling us through their pain and through their abuse of us. I think forgiveness is a great tool. It's amazing how much it comes up. Even in some trauma ministries, quote unquote, we've dealt with, the first step is you've got to forgive.
Yeah.
I would tell people that's not the first step. That's down the road a ways. It may be your first step, and if so, the Holy Spirit can lead you. But don't just turn to somebody and say, you know, if you forgive them, you'll be fine after that.
Because it's for you, and it's for them, for you, so it doesn't own you. And that's where even lately I've been dealing, anger has come up, and I'm not been one who has been angry and angry at a childhood lost at those who and what they did. And yeah, so, you know, just forgive them and then go on. That doesn't help because then what are you doing? You're just pushing that anger down. You're not dealing with it.
It's part of the Christian aversion to pain. I think a lot of people have enough pain in their own life that when they get near somebody else, they have pain or greater pain or whatever. Also, we want to do oftentimes just slap a Band-Aid on it, just cover it up. Forgiveness is a great way to just throw it on somebody. It's a way to do it. It's a great way for someone not to have to hear your story. Instead of that, really let God have the process of forgiveness. Sarah will forgive in time. But until you're into the depth of the pain of it, and if you forgive too quickly, it's just a Band-Aid. It won't last because the stuff's still in there.
Because I was afraid I'm going to be an angry person because there's so much scripture about anger and hatred and all that, blah, 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 you know, and so...
Blah, other, blah, 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 yeah. Scripture? Wow.
No, well, just... But somebody said the other day, bless her heart, I was talking to her and she said, just because you're angry doesn't make you an angry person.
That's a good thing.
Because I'm afraid because I'm angry, I am that angry person. And I'm not. I'm just...
You're just dealing with some anger.
And when I'm saying I'm angry, and I would just... it's probably just maybe a little bit more. It's not like I'm yelling at her or even elevating my voice a lot. but internally I'm angry.
And if you trust the Holy Spirit to work on those things, to lead Sarah to forgiveness when that's the time for that. Sarah's still exploring what happened to her.
Yeah.
So the forgiveness, if it's given, would be premature. It's going to have to come at a time, okay, I understand what's happened, I understand how it's impacted my story, and now I'm ready to let it go. And the Holy Spirit will do that. And we try and push people down it too fast because we're uncomfortable with people's pain. It's not only not helpful, it really destroys something inside somebody dealing with trauma. When somebody slaps a pat answer on a very real moment of crisis.
All it does is put more pressure on you.
Especially when you know it's to make them more comfortable. I mean, they may not know that, but you know that. It yeah. feels like that. What else was not helpful for you?
When people have used my trauma against me.
And now have people done that?
They attacked you. They use it in an attack to you.
Yeah, I can handle it for you, though. I will. But yeah, it's been...
That's angry.
It's people you love, right? It's people that you care about, and they are going to take, Wayne deserves this. Sarah shouldn't have repented, and Sarah shouldn't have come back. She should have stayed gone. Wayne's a horrible person.
Yeah.
Wayne only writes about love. He doesn't live it. We've had some horrible, horrible things said to us by people that we admire. Another place of learning the agony of God is an undeserved rejection, which... Kyle and I are going to talk about down the road this undeserved rejection of people who say they love you, who've been significant in your life great periods of time, but don't want to walk with you through this. There's a pain in that.
You find out who your friends are.
That God heals. Yeah, and you do find that out too.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And this comes from the trip too that I see. There is some people who have shared their trauma to. If it's by family, like a grandpa or an uncle or cousin or whatever, and the people in which they tell them in the story, in the family, they deny it and say, oh, that didn't happen. Well, that just re-traumatizes them because now they're not even believed when they're sharing their story. And that is...
Anything we do that minimizes someone's pain. Yeah. And one of the great ways we're just hearing about some of that happens, even where there's abuse by a church leader of somebody,
yep.
sexually or with authority or whatever, that once you minimize someone's pain by telling a different story, oh, it wasn't quite that bad, you know, just a momentary lapse of temptation on the part of a leader.
Yeah.
By trying to embellish the person we care about and minimize, you're minimizing the reality for the victim.
And their worth as a person.
And that really, really hurts.
Crushes you. It just takes you into a deeper hole sometimes.
Yeah, we're way over time, so we're going to have to wind this up. I'll just say this last thing, which we talked about before we started this podcast, which is we hear it from other people in trauma things. I know my story is not as bad as Sarah's.
Oh, my heart breaks for them.
I mean, they're being gracious.
Very gracious, and bless them for that. They're very sensitive to, and they're aware, and... They're empathetic for people. And that's why they're saying it.
But they're minimizing their own pain and yep. saying it. And yes. I think what I love about people I've met who've survived trauma and even find healing in trauma is there's no comparative thing that goes on there. Your pain is your pain. No. It may have been just a bad look you got from your parents enough time to make you feel diminished as a person. And it may have been violent actions, sexual abuse. Yeah. It can be all kinds of things. But you don't compare the level of trauma.
There will always, always, always be someone who has a worse story than yours.
And if you have that and someone's telling you their story, do not offer yours.
Yeah. I mean, there's a place for that down the road.
Other people do it too. They'll talk about, you know, some neat blessing in their life and someone else. Oh, you should have heard. You should have seen it from me. We minimize each other's pain or joy.
Mm-hmm.
Because we want to have the center stage. I've done that a lot in my life. I can look back and say a lot of times when I have somebody sharing something neat with me, and then I think of a neat story where God did something that was even better. And when you do that, you're just shutting people down. Like you said, they don't feel valuable.
Yeah.
That's important. Well, babe, thank you for coming back.
You're welcome.
And I mean that in a variety of ways. But thanks for coming. Thanks for coming back on the podcast. Is how I meant it this time.
Thanks for coming back,
Yeah, and you can say thanks for waiting for me. Great. It's great to have you again. I can't wait to have you back another time. I'm sure you will. Now you seem more comfortable doing this kind of thing from time to time. Yeah. And it's good to have somebody in the wings when Kyle. Where's Kyle? And Kyle's
like, he's tired.
I'm too tired. He's I can't do it. And if you want to join Sarah and I for our next conversation about trauma, we're going to have that on Sunday, February 26th at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you want to join us, we're about 12 people in the room. So if you want to get on that, let us know. If you don't fit in that time, we'll have some future times up the road.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.